You are listening to Radio Albion.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. Today's date is September 28th, 2025. And tonight we're going to talk about something of great importance to me, of great importance to the East. I've brought him up several times in passing, but never in any detail. And that's going to change tonight. We're going to dedicate this program to the great hetman of all Ukraine, Pavel Skoropadsky, the last hetman to rule Ukraine. This is why I call for a new hetman government there, a military government under a hetman, because that is the Ukrainian version of monarchy. And this, of course, is tightly connected with Ukrainian nationalism. I have a book, which I think was published in 2018. No, I think it's more like 2019. And here's how I defined the basic conception of a nation. I'm quoting myself here. The nation is that group of people who are united in a common language. However, language is the same as constitution. It is the forms of thought and action that have come into existence as a result of trauma. These are methods of survival for building solidarity. A language refers to all forms of communication, which becomes a synonym for all social life, which then implies communication. In this case, the definition is broad enough to make it useful in different contexts while being specific enough to express a specific social object. It is cultural, not formal. It is organic and it's never mechanical. In general terms, the development of ethnic tradition is the structures of survival, rests on the structures of survival. The mechanisms that people have developed to cope with different situations such as war or famine. The commune in Russia, armed resistance in Ireland, the Cossacks in Ukraine, all derived from trauma and struggle. And these have been ways where the tradition has been preserved under the worst possible circumstances. That phrase, structures of survival, is essentially social institutions. They're written in blood. We're not talking about the state. You notice I didn't mention the state there. It's obvious that language is not just words and grammar and syntax. It's everything that's social. Nothing can function without a common language. And that implies common religion, and a common basic moral foundation as well. I don't know if you've noticed, but if you're debating leftists, I haven't been doing it as much as I used to. They don't speak the same language as we do. They don't use words in the same way that we do. So language is of essence here. Now, the reason why And I spent a lot of time on this. Hetman Pavel Skoropadsky was the last hope for Ukraine during its period of intense struggle and trauma after the fall of the monarchy in 1917 and the eventual imposition of the Soviet state on it in 1920 or so. Ukraine's interesting. It doesn't have the you know, there's so many regions that weren't part of the initial Ukrainian state system. Crimea was rarely a part of it. Galicia wasn't a part of the Rada government. And people get very confused. The intense complexity, and I did a whole show on this a few weeks ago, of what happened after the February Revolution. And the short explanation is, you have the Rada government, which was a joke. It really was just, it was just ideas. And they thought that ideas would be enough to create a new society. That was overthrown by Hetman Skoropadsky. And he was overthrown by the Masonic Directory and eventually the Soviet Union. That's what happened in that handful of years. And it's very confusing. Of course, that's a very oversimplified, but we're going to talk about that here, specifically with Skoropadsky as the last hope of that country. It's very difficult to conceive of national independence at the time, especially at the time, given its very rough neighborhood. It would have to rely on somebody. Russia makes the most sense, only that it's Orthodox and they speak almost the same language. But as you know, in my book and other writings and lectures I've given on here, Ukraine has found patrons in Turkey, believe it or not, Doroshenko, Sweden, Poland. And that's because Ukraine is too small to become independent. It's in a neighborhood where, especially given the Black Sea, the presence of Russia, it's very difficult to conceive of an actual independent Ukraine, unless it's connected in a brotherly way with Russia, in the same way that Belarus functions today. And that's my position on Ukrainian nationalism, as you've heard me say many times. The confrontation between the whites and the reds in the civil war in Russia was influenced massively by other local conflicts. And one of the most significant ones was Little Russia or Ukraine. Even the name of that country has been subject of dispute. General Denikin called the land of present-day Ukraine Little Russia when he addressed the population on the territories occupied by the All-Union Socialist Republic. But to be fair, little or mala didn't mean, today it normally just means, you know, small, minor. Back then it meant a little bit, it was a little different. It meant, you know, there was, you know, Magna Graecia was in Italy. That means Little Greece would have been Greece itself. It's just a matter of size. And nothing else. It's not meant as a diminutive in this case. October 1917, the Bolsheviks seized power in Russia. Very few forces in Ukraine at the time recognized their rule. And because of the civil war, they were virtually independent. Government established on its territory was first called the Ukrainian People's Republic, the UNR, the Central Rada, has many names. The same thing. The Central Rada was their Duma, their legislature, considered the central institution and the basis of the armed forces, were in fact the former units of the Russian Imperial Officer Corps, subject to Ukrainianization. It was Hetman Skoropadsky's corps that remained the most combat-ready of these units. Skoropadsky and his forces carried themselves very well. He fought to keep the Reds from taking Ukraine. There was a small communist rebellion that was suppressed. There were Bolshevik units in the Russian army that were quickly neutralized by him. Some were defeated in battle. For the most part, some were simply transported under escort to the destinations from where they were originally recruited. Not recognizing the power of the Bolsheviks in Moscow, the Rada and the UNR were faced with the need to confront the Reds somehow. They entered into alliance with General Kalinin on the Don, the Cossack. Of course, Kotopatsky was a Cossack himself. But the truth is, for a short time under Hetman Kotopatsky, Ukraine was an island of stability in a crumbling Eastern Slavic world. Refugees and those who wanted to resist the communists began to flock there. But the Rada government was, to be nice about it, inconsistent. It was a far representative body, consisting almost entirely of various forms of socialists or leftists. You notice that in this era, all the attempts to create a representative institution in Russia and Ukraine, each one of them only permitted leftists to run for office, and they also saw a very low voter turnout. Yes, they sought a certain agrarian reform in the spirit of the socialist revolutionaries. They sought a socialization of land, by the way, without a bureaucracy, stirring up some revolutionary sentiments. But socialization is not the same as redistribution. The political unity of the country was in jeopardy. In the circles of both large and small landowners, as well as peasant proprietors, they demanded a new government. The alternative to the Rada was the Ukrainian People's Hromada, headed by Skoropadsky, in alliance with the Ukrainian Democratic Peasant Party and with the patronage of the German occupation authorities. The coup was carried out, and Skoropadsky took over then. Fortunately, his rule lasted a very short time, only from April 29th to December 14th, 1918, which just makes his achievements all the more extraordinary. Once he was driven out by the Directory, the openly Masonic Directory, he fled to Germany. He was born in Germany, and he was killed in an Allied bombing raid in Munich in 1945. The man was a talented and popular Russian officer. He was not really a politician, and it showed. He fought in the Russo-Japanese War and in World War I. And he was one of the few officers to be awarded the Order of St. George, which is essentially the Medal of Honor equivalent, the Order of St. Vladimir, the Order of St. Anna, and the Order of St. Stanislaus. Which is very rare. In the battle near Kropotkin during World War I, his detachment took an enemy sector, kept it despite a shower of shells and bullets. At the same time, he not only stood his ground, but he inflicted significant losses on the retreating Germans. So his competence and bravery were never in question. Commander Konirov, who was head of the White Army for a short time, looking for ways to increase the morale of the army decaying after the February Revolution and the infamous Order No. 1, which sought to, quote, democratize the army, he chose Kotopatsky's army as a model. Ukraine at the time was looking at four possible realistic paths. Decisions of which depended on the fate of these people. Simon Petluria, of course Lenin, Hetman Kotopatsky, or Fyodor Keller. The actions of each led to consequences that we still feel today. I can't imagine the PTSD in a nation that had been at war for this long. In a war with massive casualties that no other war ever experienced. There's no way there was a family other than Jewish families that didn't have at least one death and maybe a severe injury. There's a mental background of all this that no one's ever really investigated. But the Rada government, which came in after February, you know, the overthrow of Tsar Nicholas, and that Ukraine was kind of on its own. But it failed miserably, and we'll get to why that is in a little bit. Skoropadsky wanted to be a representative monarch, being Hetman, anointed, in fact. He had to be somewhat of a politician. He had to maneuver among the different interest groups, and that was very difficult. He pleased everyone and no one. So, for example, he decreed an 8-hour workday in wartime, a policy that existed nowhere else. He annoyed the Ukrainophiles with his pro-Russian cores and the Russophiles with his Ukrainization. But so much of this was because the passions had been stirred up by war and all of these ideologies that were trying to impose themselves on this confused and shocked and violated population. At a critical hour for the country, Skoropadsky chose Russian officers as support. Well, he had no choice in the matter. And he called on the commander of the White Russian Cavalry, General Theodore Keller, one of my favorites, to lead them. A strong Russian officer, Keller had a difficult relationship with politics. Early on, he refused to participate in the white struggle, justifying this by the fact that until a campaign against Petrograd, and then later Moscow, was proclaimed for the sake of the restoration of the monarchy, he would do nothing. And I understand that. Nevertheless, circumstances forced him to enter the service of Skoropadsky. Remember, the title of Hetman is a royal one. He immediately began to organize and fight. Keller, however, didn't believe in Ukrainian independence under any circumstances. In fact, he didn't use the word Ukraine ever. He was fighting for Russia without even the slightest mention of Ukrainian autonomy. He made not the slightest concession in that regard. His big error was his, and I've said this before, his demand for a unitary Russia. So the military under him, who was Ukrainian, in Ukraine, under Skoropadsky, became unstable, going to the side of the UNR or other nationalist groups. It's hard to expect loyalty from Ukrainians, even when the idea of autonomy in their own army is being rejected. Only white Russians agreed to battle the Reds and the Poles. Denikin wrote later that in such a situation, Keller's intransigence only complicated the situation and harmed the cause of saving the country, and that is a quote. Denikin is the one who himself was later accused of not understanding the aspirations of the Ukrainians. However, the separatists too, they didn't realize they were playing with fire. They didn't really know what the Reds truly were. Had they known the future, they would have joined with anybody just for the sake of destroying Bolshevism. Germany allegedly lost the First World War. Well, I guess it did with the entrance of the United States. November of 1918, the German Revolution took place. Skoropadsky's position was complicated. He united with the Volunteer Army, the White Army, and he did proclaim Ukraine as an integral part of a future Russia, but an autonomous part of a future Russia. And this is when the Masonic figures of the previously dissolved Central Rada, as well as Simon Petluria, created the five-member directory and overthrew him. Petluria actually created a military dictatorship, having defeated the Hetman's army near Kiev. His last support was the Russian units. Skoropadsky hastily put them together from mostly the officer corps. The Germans declared their neutrality. December 14th, the Hetman was forced to flee to Germany. The forces of Petluria, bursting into the city, staged massacres of white officers. Now, he didn't hate Russia, but he also didn't want to give up the idea of Ukraine's autonomy, even during the war and the threat of Bolshevism, which he clearly didn't understand. Petluria is one of these people who destroyed Ukraine. Regardless of the Skoropadsky trying to reach an agreement with him, it didn't matter. Now, before the February Revolution of 1917, Skoropadsky really didn't participate in anything political. He was from a Cossack family, a noble family, eventually lieutenant general of the Russian army, and a former aide of the last Russian Tsar, the great Tsar Nicholas II. He was a military man first and foremost. He commanded the 34th Russian Corps of the Southwestern Front, which had been partially Ukrainianized. The defense of right-bank Ukraine against the offensive of the outnumbered Russian unit at the end of 1917 became possible only thanks to the troops of Skoropadsky. Ukrainian nationalists then saw him a little differently. He expelled the Bolsheviks from Ukraine, and only he can do this. But even after that, he didn't take an active part in politics. In his memoirs, Skoropadsky admitted he was brought up in Russian culture and therefore did not feel hostility towards Russia at all. Quote, "The difference between me and Ukrainian circles is that the latter who love Ukraine hate Russia. I don't have this hatred. I wanted a Ukraine that was not hostile to Great Russia, but fraternal, where all Ukrainian aspirations would find a way out. Then, in fact, this hatred of Russia, which is artificially incited by the Galicians, would have no foundation and in the end would disappear altogether." Of course, that quote has quite a bit of relevance today. I don't know if any of you have dealt with Ukrainian nationalists specifically, but there's something about them. I don't know, but prior to the war, way prior to the war, there's something about them that they are just impossible to talk to. But what was Russia at the time? Aware of his connection with Ukraine, Skoropadsky nevertheless sought in terms of Russian statehood and shared the idea of a federation of Ukraine within a new Russian empire, not a nation state. He believed that only a union between those states would ensure both their futures, and he says in the same source, "I do not hide. I only want a broad, decentralized Russia. I want Ukraine and Ukrainian nationality to live. I want Ukraine to occupy a worthy place in this closer union of individual regions and states. And all these regions and states merge into one mighty organism called the Great Russian Nation as equals." Well, to a great extent, that was the case before Peter I. So in 1918, Skoropadsky was a federalist and believed that the Ukrainian nation could exist only as a constituent part of a Russian federation, or if independent, still very tightly bound to Russia. But the primary concern with Bolshevism He needed to build a social movement and a national movement to overcome social local anarchy. He says, I always believe that the Ukrainian movement is correct because it is imbued with a strong nationalist feeling. And playing on these strings is the easiest way to save people from Bolshevism. Of course, independence, which at that time had to be strictly adhered to because of the Germans, who firmly stood on it, was never vital to me. But, you know, the truth is, independence was a pipe dream anyway. German ruling circles believe that Ukraine should currently exist as an independent state. And that's the position that the Hetman government took. Well, that would be its last until 1991. On April 30th, 1918, Skoropadsky letter the Ukrainian Democratic Labor Party, and he emphasized this. When I took power in my hands at such a time, it was in order to build Ukraine and be a faithful son of our dear Ukraine to the end of my days and to defend the state and national rights of the Ukrainian people with all my might. I'm asking and ordering you, brothers, faithfully and sincerely, serve our independent Ukrainian state. The leftists and Freemasons there under Luria, they erroneously perceived the Hetman's coup as somehow directed against Ukrainian statehood. Yes, there were mostly Russian officers predominating among the participants of the coup. But there weren't a whole lot of experienced Ukrainian ones. Or they were had Ukrainian names, but were, you know, in a Russian milieu, you know, living elsewhere. He didn't have members of the national parties in his early government in the first few months, because so many of them were on the left. The Ukrainian Socialist Parties called the Hetman speech a Russophile monarchical coup. In their joint statement. And according to the National Democratic or Liberal and Anglophile opposition, Russian cadets, Oktoberists, and in general representatives of those non-Ukrainian groups who have always been hostile to the Ukrainian movement and Ukrainian statehood, fought it with all their might in the name of a unified, indivisible Russia, whatever form that might take. The great Ukrainian historian, Dmitry Dorosenko, recalled how during a personal meeting with the Hetman, he assured him that his goal was to build a strong, independent national state in Ukraine. However, many contemporaries, including high-ranking officials in the Hetman's government itself, perceived these statements as Skoropadsky's tribute to the official Ukrainian idea. During a private conversation with the Russian General Alexander Lugomsky, mid-May, roughly 1918, he said that the Hetman declared that he was not a sincere Ukrainian, that all his efforts were aimed at establishing order in Ukraine and creating a strong army. I don't think that's a problem, but all the other attempts to build a strong army in Ukraine under the separatists had failed. It's failed today. It's failed then. When Russia destroys Bolshevism, Skoropadsky explained, he'll be the first to raise his voice for unification with Russia in some sense. As he perfectly understands that Ukraine cannot be an independent state, nor can any country of that size. You know, Galicia has an interesting reputation. Eastern Galicia is where the Russophile movement was formed. I can't get into that here, I've dealt with it many times on this show. There's also an aspect of Western Ukrainian alleged hatred of Russia, or at least a negative attitude. I simply don't think it's true. Well, let me clarify this. This is what Skoropadsky, this is April 29th, 1918. This is when he first took power. This is his letter to the Ukrainian nation, and this translation is mine, so it might not be very good. All citizens, all of you Cossacks and citizens of Ukraine are familiar with the events of recent times, and the blood of the best sons of Ukraine flowed like a fountain in a newly reborn Ukrainian state stood at the brink of destruction. She was saved, thanks to the powerful support of the Central Powers. who, true to their word, continue to this day to fight for the integrity and peace of Ukraine. With such support, everyone had hope that order would begin to be restored, that Ukraine's economic life would finally return to something normal. These hopes didn't come true. The former Ukrainian government didn't carry out any state building at all. It was incapable of doing so. Riots, anarchy continue. Economic devastation, unemployment increased and spread with each passing day. Eventually, the terrible specter of famine looms over the once rich Ukraine. You know, can you imagine a country that could probably feed the world all by itself is now looking at famine? Anyway, this situation, he says, which threatens Ukraine with a new catastrophe, has deeply shaken all the working people. They've all come forward with a categorical demand to immediately build a state capable of providing the population with peace, law, and the opportunity for creative labor. I am a faithful son of Ukraine. I have responded to this call. I temporarily assume full power. I declare myself hetman of all Ukraine. The administration of Ukraine will be carried out through the mediation of the cabinet of ministers appointed by me on the final justification of the laws and temporary state system attached hereto. The central and small councils, as well as the land committees, are dissolved from this day forward, meaning the Rada. All ministers and comrades are dismissed. I will firmly stand guard over order and law in the Ukrainian state. I will seek the immediate execution of all state orders, and I will support the authority of the government, not stopping at any extreme measures. The rights of private property, the foundation of culture and civilization, are being fully restored. While the orders of the former Ukrainian government and equally the provisional Russian government are being canceled and annulled. Along with this, measures will be taken to alienate lands at their real value from large owners, or in order to provide plots to small farmers. At the same time, the rights of the working class will be firmly secured. Special attention will be given to improving the legal status and the working conditions of railway workers, who, under exceptionally difficult circumstances, never abandon their responsible labor. In the economic and financial areas, there's complete freedom of trade, and a wide space of private enterprise initiative is opened. I foresee all the difficulty of the work ahead for me, and I pray to God, give me the strength to worthily fulfill what I consider my duty to my native Ukraine in this exceptional and critical time for it. Any personal motivations are distant and alien to me. My main goal is the benefit and well-being of the people of our dear Ukraine. With this in mind, I call on all of you, citizens and Cossacks, regardless of nationality or religion, come and help me and my ministers, collaborators, and this common, highly responsible labor. I should note that Orthodoxy was the official religion of Ukraine under the Hetman. That was not the case elsewhere. But in late 1918, the Central Powers were, it seemed, being defeated. So the activity of Russian political parties in Ukraine increased tremendously. In fact, there were those who thought that the Hetman would even openly switch to a policy of unification with Red Russia, which is nonsense, of course. Skoropadsky, over and over again, trying to consider and try to negotiate with Ukrainian nationalist forces. He didn't want an open confrontation with the more extreme nationalist parties, small as they were. You know, I believe it when he says that this isn't in my own interest, when he says personal motivations are not here. They're alien to me, he says, because he was apolitical before all this happened. October 14th, he received delegates of the Russian Union of Peasants, who called on him to unify Ukraine with Russia. But what was Russia in 1918? Skoropadsky agreed, in turn advising them to be patient. In a private conversation with a representative of the Russian Volunteer Army, Hetman expressed his view of the situation this way. I'm a Russian man and a Russian officer. Due to the circumstances, I have to say and do absolutely not what I feel and want. This must be understood. I definitely looked and am looking. My close real Russian people know this. The future of Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine must enter as an equal on the terms of a federation. The time of command from Petersburg has passed. This is my deep conviction. Independence was necessary as the only opposition to Bolshevism. It was necessary to raise the Ukrainian national feeling. That's the point of view that he took to the day he was killed. At the time, Skripatsky began to actively pursue his own political course. He sought the counsel in Poltava, the great general Pavel Krasno, the hetman of the great Don Cossack army. In a private conversation, they discussed the current political situation and the means of fighting the Bolshevik menace. In his memoirs, Krasnov conveyed Skripatsky's words this way. Now, this is now secondhand. You, of course, understand that I, the wing adjutant of the general of His Majesty's retinue, cannot be a sheer Ukrainian and talk about a free Ukraine. There can be no question of returning to the empire and restoring imperial power. Here in Ukraine, I had to choose either independence or Bolshevism, and I chose independence. There was nothing wrong with this independence. Leave the people to live as they please. Well, remember, the Hetman is Ukrainian royalty. He was the restoration. He was anointed by Archbishop Nikodym. But he seemed to believe that the communists would stay in power. There was a lot of debate on that. His ideal Russia and the real Russia were two very different things. If the White Armies won, then we could talk. An independent Ukraine may have existed only because of the war. So we created this alliance. Skripatsky and the Don Ataman set for themselves, after their meetings, I quoted, quote, the establishment of more friendly relations, the merging of separate parts of the shattered White Russia, the union of the general struggle with Bolshevism, the struggle for the liberation of Russia. It's one of the few times where an Ataman of a major Cossack force worried about Russia as a whole rather than their own unit. And this kind of leaked out. These conversations leaked out. And the media, which was never suppressed under his rule, of course, they distorted it in every way possible. But going to the Cossacks, that was the way to go. Now you have two hetmans working together. He said that Ukrainian politicians, there was this sense of idealism, which in a university is okay, but in the midst of, well, really three wars, World War I, which now, of course, is over, the Russian Civil War, and to a lesser extent, a Ukrainian Civil War, but we include Ukraine in the Russian Civil War. Not wanting an army or bureaucracy at that time is absurd. They live in a fantasy world. Using the Ukrainian nationalism as a counterweight to Bolshevism in order to restore the Russian state, well, of course, that was perfectly acceptable to him. But he never falsely believed those things. November 14th, 1918, the Hetman's charter in response to this appeared in the Federation of Ukraine with the future non-Bolshevik Russia. Here's what he said. Now we have a new state task before us. The states of agreement have long been friends of the former unified Russian state. Now, after the great disturbances experienced by Russia, the conditions of its future existence must certainly change. The ancient power and strength of the all-Russian state must be restored on other principles, federal ones. In this federation, Ukraine has to occupy one of the first places. It has to be the first to take part in the creation of an all-Russian federation, the ultimate goal of which would be the restoration of Great Russia. Achieving this goal is key to the well-being of all of Russia and Russians, as well as ensuring the economic and cultural development of the Ukrainian nation. on its solid foundations of national state identity. At no time did he ever renounce the independence of Ukraine or the separateness or Ukrainian nationalism as a whole. It was a part of building what he saw as a new Russian Federation if the whites had won. Hetman saw not only the salvation of Russia and Ukraine from Bolshevism, but also a guarantee, the state of existence in the entire East Slavic world. That would include the autonomous Ukraine. He said, Russia can be revived only on a federal basis, and Ukraine can exist only as an equal member of the federal state. I've already stated that I wanted for a long time, but I couldn't do it before. That also comes from his memoir. It's probably the clearest of all of his political statements. Now, the directory that overthrew him announced the restoration of the Ukrainian People's Republic, although they were anti-communist. The Hetman's administration was completely destroyed. Apparently, the Hetman's federal course, and what we've been saying up until now, federalism did not receive support from the White Army. They wanted a firm, unified Russia, period. Although that could be exaggerated. We'll get to that in a minute. Well, the Russian officer units in Kiev were subordinated to the institutions of the Hetman's government. The members of these military formations did not hide their contempt for the Hetman's regime. We're talking about the directory now. Remember, he was a Kawan, that is a non-Mason. Military commanders supported by Skhodopadsky also distanced themselves from the Hetman's Federalist course in general, and from his person in particular, as the Central Powers lost the war. The Directory laid siege to Kiev as they took the city. They broke the resistance of a few officers. December 14, 1918, the Directory took power, and Skhodopadsky managed to secretly leave for Germany, together with German troops evacuating from Ukraine. The collapse of the Hetman's regime witnessed the crisis of the Federalist idea in general. The era of revolutionary radicalization of society did not contribute to the popularity of compromise ideas, especially in the time of universal PTSD. Remember, in a war where you had tens of millions of casualties, entire areas are wiped out. They were using poison gas. Eventually, he was declared an outlaw. Eventually, pleasing nobody. Certainly the left, but also aspects of the right. But when he had to flee to Germany, any conception of an independent Ukraine was doomed forever. It is true, though, that after the October Revolution, Ukraine was a stronghold of anti-Bolshevik forces. The problem is they were of varied political orientations. Many of them sought an alliance with Poland after the Austro-Hungarian Empire ceased to exist. Direct Ukrainian-Soviet confrontation began during the first period of the existence of the Ukrainian People's Republic. That is, before the German occupation and the proclamation of the Hetmanate. The friendly relations of the Rada with General Kalydin determined the hostile attitude of the Soviets toward the emerging state and its autonomy. Militarily, though, it could do very little. After several attempts to speak with the UNR in the language of ultimatums, the communists switched to open hostility, sending Bolshevik units with the former Russian army led by Antonov Ovsyenko against Ukraine. Didn't take long. The Reds eventually took Odessa, the Dnieper, Donetsk, Luhansk, Kherson, and Kharkov. And that was declared the capital of the first Donetsk-Kyrgyzstan Rural Republic in 1918, which is an interesting topic in and of itself. This republic was never recognized by Lenin for two reasons. This very small republic in Donetsk, while it was claiming to be, you know, revolutionary, it was a bottom-up movement. And also that it was very ideologically diverse. Now, some of this nonsense was destroyed by Austria-Hungary and Germany before the war ended. Odessa had its own republic, though, at some point. You had a lot of these small Soviet republics springing up, but they weren't Soviet in the normal sense of the term. But in these areas we're talking about, population speaking Ukrainian was something like 10%. But the only thing that the Rada government ever did was successfully resisting the Bolshevik uprising in Kiev. It was very small. And Skodopadsky had a role in that. In Soviet history, they pretend that the proletariat had an uprising in the weapons plant. And yet few workers wanted it. The UNR units drove the rebels from there, fired at the factory with cannon and stormed it. But this didn't save Kiev from the advancing Red Troops. And the city fell in February 1918. So what do the Reds do when they take a city, especially a major city like Kiev? They stage a total terror campaign. Ukraine was within the Pale of Settlement. The Communist Party was almost exclusively Jewish. They had no connection with the average Ukrainian. They staged a total terror campaign, destroying anyone who wasn't ideologically reliable. Almost the first few days, 2,000 people became its victims, usually Russian officers. You had a group of officers who didn't want to join anyone's army, believing that the choice between Ukraine and the Soviets was a choice of equal evils. They were still shot. Western Ukraine was still controlled by the UNR. It made a separate peace and alliance with Germany. While it lasted, the German army lost an offensive against the Red Army, recaptured Kiev, and continued to move east. The Donetsk-Kyrgyzstan rogue armies, as small as they were, could not compete with the German military machine. Eventually it was liquidated. It didn't last very long at all. And the UNR troops again occupied Kiev, putting an end to the Hetmanate. Later, they combed the city again for the presence of Russian officers. Those who wanted to sit out were again very disappointed. In terms of the scale of repressions, the Petlurists were not equal to the Reds, but they were similar. And now under their control, the Petlurists received exactly what they had dished out before. And the only man who was able to control all of that would have been the Hetman. In February 1919, the Red Army took the Ukrainian capital for the final time. One of the groups that was key to this were those under Nestor Makhno. Makhno claimed to be a Cossack, and not in a million years was he ever a Cossack. He's not from a Cossack family. It's just a self-appointed. He had a small anarchist group, and his sole purpose really was to fight anti-Semitism, if you read the literature on this subject. And in the rear of the white armies, he created such havoc that it forced the whites to split their forces in two. The Reds eventually drove the UNR, or their Rada state, all the way to Poland. The UNR had lost everything. Then Ukraine was given another chance to save them from the Bolsheviks Petluria, who was already dictator of Ukraine at the time, entered into alliance with Galicia, the Western Ukrainian People's Republic, pressed by Poland. The UNR, from which bits remained from the early Rada state, it's all a lot of the same people, and the ZUNR, the Western People's Republic of Ukraine, was as part of the Habsburg Empire, merged into a single entity. There was a Galician Empire, which consisted mostly of Lvov residents, became an autonomous allied army of the UNR and Directory, and its main fighting force. At this very time, this is when Denikin entered Ukraine. Two armies hit the Ukrainian Reds from two sides. The Bolsheviks had to retreat. The Galicians fought very skillfully and very courageously. The end of the summer 1919, two Allied armies approached Kiev. Ukrainians, whose army lost all pro-Soviet soldiers during their previous retreat, took Kiev. The backbone of the army was made up of Galicians, former subjects of the Austria-Hungary. Besides them, there were Cossacks in this army too. Having occupied Kiev, Ukrainians did not think about things like checkpoints, outposts, and guards. As I mentioned before, they had no conception of reality. They didn't have the money for it. They didn't have the experience with it. Of course, the Reds would take it very shortly thereafter. I shouldn't have said that. I made a mistake when I said they took it for the final time. There was one other time. Kiev went back and forth, back and forth. It wouldn't take long. But Simon Petlura was a very difficult man. Regiments that were removed from the Moscow front for the war with Petlura also slowed down the advance of the All-Union Socialist Republic to the north. And the divisions transferred from there to eliminate Makhno's breakthrough, which made the capture of Moscow impossible. And, oh, don't forget, the USSR moved their capital to Moscow on March 12, 1918, to add even more complexity to this. So these separatists, these with the Directory, the Rada, all these weirdos, it cost Ukraine their country. They paid. They paid in blood. White armies had to waste energy fighting dreamy idiots who dream of Ukraine from the Danube to the Volga, victims of traitors who spoke of unity and then ripped off the Russian flag. But it's hardly possible to assert with absolute certainty that even the capture of Moscow would have ended the Civil War. But it certainly would have increased the probability of a white victory. The whites had to take Kiev, Vinnytsia, Zhytomyr, Belaya, Sokolov, and other cities. Were negotiations at all possible with the Bolsheviks? Well, the Reds were Machiavellian. You couldn't believe anything they said. And Denikin published an appeal to the population of Little Russia, which, if we get to it, I'll read it. So to keep in mind, to remind you, there's three things. The Rada government, ideologically very, very diverse, with no real bureaucracy, had some units, made a deal with the Cossacks. That occurred right after the revolution of February Revolution of 1917. They couldn't maintain order. Why did they fail? They became very unpopular among the population. They had their Ukrainian central executive. They had no way of resolving the problems of the country, primarily the labor and agrarian issues. They could write about them all the time, but they had no way to enforce anything. The Rada, as I said before, didn't really have combat-ready armed forces. Believe it or not, in this war, its socialist majority considered it unnecessary to create a regular army. They wanted a people's militia, which essentially would be a law and order, like a National Guard. They didn't have anyone experienced in bureaucracy. They didn't believe in it. not to mention the constant contradictions among the dominant factions in the Central Council, didn't allow their activities to be effective anyway. You didn't have many people to choose from. And the constant personal conflicts, let alone ideological ones, doomed this. And that's why the Hetmanate took over. Now, it's true, the Hetmanate only lasted for a few months. The Directory took over under Petluria. And so many of the very same Rada people were involved with him. Now, I have to address this issue of the connection with Germany. By the end of April 1918, Kudipatsky, again supported by the Central Powers, carried on a coup and overthrew the Rada state. The state was declared as a Hetman state, i.e. a royal state. It was supported by the German army. It put an end to the unenforceable socialist policy of the Central Council of the Rada. Most of the servicemen of the Republican army were disarmed and demobilized. During the reign of Skoropadsky, Ukraine achieved political stabilization, which was shocking at the time. The bar was very low, and began the systemic formation of state structures for the first time in years. Now, there was tremendous achievements in a very short time. Many of the elites, even in Western Europe, did not support a conservative royalist movement in Ukraine. They wanted to believe that they were, you know, he was there only because the Germans and the Austrians. Well, any government had to ally with someone to function. There's no getting out of that. It is true that the Germans, right near the end of the war, they did make an oral agreement with General Skoropadsky, and this was what was asked of him. He had to recognize the Brest Treaty by the Hetman, and of course, Brest-Litovsk gave away huge chunks of Russia to the Germans and Austrians. The sale of food was very important, access to resources. Reforms aimed at restoring private property and the market economy, and fixed prices for German soldiers to purchase essential goods, in other words, below market value. And there's nothing wrong with this, especially given the time period. The Hetman only had his forces in their very earliest stages. But right after that, they had to withdraw. They were, you know, the Cossacks weren't able to keep Kiev against the Directory. Essentially, the Directory was the Rada government with actual weapons and international recognition. The Directory was I made a mistake. They weren't recognized in the international arena. They couldn't count on anyone's support. The Hetman government was, at least in Central Europe. So not only did you have an independent Ukraine under the Hetman, it was recognized by many powers, not just the Central Powers. The Directory was not recognized in the international arena, couldn't count on anyone's support. The Bolsheviks were, however, and I think we know that. The Bolshevik armies entered the territory left by the detachments of the Central Power states. In the south of Ukraine, in Crimea, the volunteer army was preparing for an offensive, but they were fighting for an indivisible Russia, not recognizing Ukrainian statehood. So the enthusiasm there was a bit of a problem. Not even autonomy. So the Directory ended up fighting Denikin. And to make matters worse, there was a typhus epidemic that broke out and deepened the failures of the front. usually among the Galician army. This is ridiculously complex, I understand. But in truth, Skoropadsky, the last hetman of Ukraine, was a talented military leader and an ardent patriot. Under the most extremely difficult conditions you can imagine, civil war at numerous levels, in only just a few months, managed to carry out fundamental state reforms in Ukraine, replacing the Central Rada and taking up the state building of the young Ukrainian state without being anti-Russian. Ukraine had become a strong, self-sufficient state. Neighbors both east and west were forced to reckon with. That shows tremendous talent. A descendant of Hetman's family and a fan of Cossack glory, he revived real national traditions, creating a fashion for all things Ukrainian. From the very beginning, the National Democratic Revolution, 1917-1920, he supported the Ukrainian National Liberation Movement, transferring it into the practical channel of building and protecting an independent Ukrainian state against the Reds. He became the founder and commander of the 1st Ukrainian Military Corps. What little forces the Rada government ever had were because of him. His corps eventually grew to 20 divisions, 14,000 later, 60,000 soldiers, not just with rifles, machine guns, artillery. He had two artillery regiments prior to taking over, by the way. Armored vehicles, cavalry, their own military engineering units, and so on. Each led by career officers who were supporters of some version of the Ukrainian state. It's hard to overestimate the significance of a large military unit in the conditions of anarchy, 1917-1918. But in Ukraine, for the first time since the Cossack days, the ruin, and only its own army was revived, but combat ready, ideologically motivated, and sizable. A sharp contrast to what the Reds had. It was Skoropadsky who repressed the first two Bolshevik rebellions in Ukraine. He assumed leadership of Ukraine during a very difficult period. Again, April 29th to December 14th, 1918. That's not a long period of time. It was under the Austro-German military presence in Ukraine. But their demands of him were fairly minor. But his armed forces were substantial. All the other attempts showed a complete inability to govern. We see that today as well. The Directory, while they had some substantial armed forces, had no conception of what an independent state was on practical terms, on a practical level. Now, Skoropadsky fought the Germans when it came to turning Ukraine into a colony. He would not permit that to happen. Germans had been in Ukraine prior to his coup, but they supported him. It was the only way to preserve Ukrainian statehood. It was a wise move. Germany and Austria-Hungary were losing World War I with the arrival of the Americans. Let me summarize his successes, though. Just basic fundamental reforms. All of these were destroyed, by the way, by the Directory, but let's go through them quickly. He had a full system of government, well-staffed and effective. More than 400 state acts were adopted, securing the independence of the country. Private property rights were restored for the first time in a long time. Free enterprise was permitted and trade flourished. You can't have free trade and anarchy. You can't build anything if you think it's going to be destroyed tomorrow. The months of starvation, late 1917, under the Bolsheviks, that was a thing of the past. The stores were stocked with goods. Ukraine became an island of prosperity in a sea of poverty and death of post-revolutionary Russia. State regulation of industry, transport, trade was established to combat any form of oligarchy. The country had a master. It had a ruler for the first time. It had a legitimate ruler. There was a sense of who was responsible for what. The monetary system finally was established that made sense. State budget was formed. Pensions began to be paid. These weren't paid before. A law on universal military service was adopted. Ukrainian armed forces were formed. It would consist of 8 Army Corps. Development of the Ukrainian Navy. National aviation began. Ukrainian police were created. Postal railway systems were established or reestablished. Ukrainian primary schools were created. 50 new Ukrainian secondary schools and 150 Ukrainian gymnasiums were opened. Ukrainian language courses were open for teachers. Ukrainian textbooks were published in huge print runs. 2 Ukrainian universities were opened in Kiev, and the other in Kamenets. While the Russian universities continued their work in peace. Ukrainian Academy of Sciences and National Archives were founded. The number of Ukrainian theater, music, and cultural institutions increased. The foundations of a true pro-Russian Ukrainian autocephalous Orthodox Church was laid out. Ultimately, when he was overthrown, Skoropadsky secured the recognition of 30 countries on the planet. Finally, the state borders of Ukraine were defined and, most importantly, recognized by people around it. I know this has been a complex, almost dazzling display. It's very hard to even simplify it. But it's easier when you understand there's really only 3 entities. The Rada, the Hetmanate, the Directory, and then, of course, eventually, the Soviets. Ukraine was much smaller back then. You know what? I know I'm over an hour, but I'm going to read Denikin's appeal to the population of Little Russia. This, and I say that maybe they're concerned with a purely unitary Russia, that Ukraine doesn't exist kind of attitude. Maybe it's an exaggeration. That's why I'm going to read this. This is his appeal to the population of Little Russia, August 12th, 1919. Long after the Hetmanate was overthrown. With the valor and blood of our armies, one after another, the Russian regions are freed from the yoke of madmen and traitors who give slavery to the deceived people instead of happiness and freedom. Regiments are approaching ancient Kiev, the mother of Russian cities, in an unstoppable desire to restore the unity that the Russians have lost. That unity, without which the great Russian people, weakened and fragmented, losing young generations in fratricidal civil strife, were unable to defend their own independence. That unity, without which a complete and correct economic life is unthinkable. The North, South, East, and West, a vast power and free exchange began to bring to each other everything at which they specialized, all the regions of Ukraine. This unity, without which a powerful Russian speech could not have been created, state could not be created, equally woven by the centuries-old efforts of Kiev, Moscow, and Petrograd. Wanting to weaken the Russian state before declaring war on it, the Germans, long before 1914, sought to destroy the United Russian tribe forged in the hard struggle. To this end, they supported and inflated a movement to the south of Russia which set itself the goal of separating its 9 provinces from Russia under the name of the Ukrainian state. The desire to tear away from Russia, a little Russian branch of the Russian people, has not been abandoned to this day. The former henchmen of the Germans, Petluri and his associates, who initiated the dismemberment of Russia, continue to pursue this evil plan of an independent Ukrainian state and fight against the revival of United Russia. However, and this is a big however, from the treacherous movement directed towards the division of Russia, it's necessary to completely distinguish the activity inspired by love for the native land, for its features, for its local antiquity, and for its local folk languages. In view of this, the basis for organizing the regions of the south of Russia will be the beginning of local self-government and decentralization. with indispensable respect for the vital characteristics of local life. Declaring Russian the state language throughout Russia, I consider it completely unacceptable to forbid the persecution of Little Russian folk language. Everyone can speak Ukrainian in local institutions, zemstva, government offices, courts. Private schools run by private funds may teach in any language. In government schools, there are those who wish lessons in the Little Russian folk language and its classical models can be established in the first years of education in elementary school. The use of the Little Russian language may be allowed to make it easier for students to assimilate. Likewise, there will be no restrictions on the Ukrainian language in print. Of course, he would never say Ukrainian. Little Russian language in print. By the providence of God, regions of South Russia are foreordained with high honor and great responsibility to become a support and source for the army selflessly going to the feet of restoring united Russia. In the struggle for united and indivisible Russia, I call on the faithful sons of the motherland to actively support the army. The army that brings deliverance from the Bolshevik yoke to the suffering people. That all those who cherish the happiness and greatness of the motherland and the success of our armies and their irresistible impulse towards the heart of Russia, Moscow, tirelessly work to create and strengthen the near and far rear of our strong support for Russian soldiers fighting at the front and the greatness and unity of our country. Now, it's very clear. I mean, he uses the condescending term Little Russian folk language, but he was not going to impose Russia on the country. He says it openly. So I think it's an exaggeration to say that this unified Great Russian project was official policy. Denikin said it. But obviously it wasn't enough. It wasn't sufficient. The reputation was already created, so there was really nothing to say beyond that. Ukraine went through trauma and convulsions, not as bad as it is now. Although, of course, the situations are related. But they went through convulsions that could have led to universal PTSD. Who knows what people were thinking? People were looking for saviors. People were looking for ideologies to help take over. Especially when the ideologies were not honest in the first place. Denikin was very clear. We're not going to impose Russian on you. Yes, there will be a great Russia, but that doesn't mean we won't respect all the aspects of a great Russia. Something that Keller didn't mention, though he should have. The Ukrainian separatist movement was, to say the least, irrational. The first Rada was one of the most bizarre experiments because it didn't really have a bureaucracy or much of an army. What little it had came from Skoropadsky. Eventually it was overthrown for the reasons I mentioned. Skoropadsky began to build a real state, a common sense, normal state. The Directory overthrew it on orders from the Grand Orient, and of course, led to nothing. There was no firm Ukrainian nation after that. In fact, the Hetman State was the very last time there was any sense of a firm, self-governing, independent Ukrainian state ever in history. And they're paying the price for it now, unfortunately. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.